Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
All right, today on Lulz, we got Nerdy Tenor from the newly minted Endgame Syndicate. We're going to talk to him about some of the toy puzzles, toy games he has whipped up for the new site. We'll get a peek at those and also ask him some questions about his dabbling in the Best Ball Daily space. You might have seen him in some of your underdog drafts trying to get to the bottom of these games. All of that and more today on Lulz. He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no. Let the DFS cats pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
Nerdy, you might be the only guest in the history of this show to wear a collared shirt when they come on here. Thank you for actually treating this program with the seriousness it deserves.
Yeah, it was between this and a shirt I got that said, "That's cute. Now bring your uncle another beer." So that's how we landed on this one.
There you go. Brian, how are you doing today?
Doing good. We got Neil in chat here. Did you see his tweet trying to show us up on his email viewership?
I did see this. So I was in the Twin Cities area doing college visit stuff with my teenager, and Neil extremely generously invited us to his 4th of July party. And yes, I did in fact use those exact words.
For the audio listener, Neil said, "This asshole called me the benevolent grandfather figure of the DFS space to my face." Neil, you can't get pissed at this. Like, you were going around calling yourself the oldest person to ever stream all 150 best ball drafts. Like, your slogan is flannel. I mean, you just need to lean in to being old as shit, Neil. I think it is what it is.
I'm older for what it's worth, so I'm just not.
Oh, are you?
I'm not as benevolent. That's the only thing.
See, Neil or Nerdy, you know a trick that I know is if you either can't manifest facial hair or you choose not to have it, you always scan younger than you actually are.
Yeah, I can't do the facial hair. Much like my father, I look like a bad Dutch painting if I get this raggedy goatee, and that's about all I get. Yeah, it's not good.
Brian. You know, people actually put like minoxidil on their face to grow their beard if they can't grow a really? Solid beard.
Wow.
Yeah.
My freshman year of college, I absolutely could not grow a mustache. I can barely grow one now. And they were doing, you know, one of those, I don't know what it was, like mustache Movember things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I, you know, grew mine out and it was still just very lightly blonde. And so I went and I got some dye because I have like, blonde hair. And so that was how I could prove that I had the mustaches, dyed it like dark brown. I looked so grimy. Things you can get away with in college, but not anymore. Nerdy, you've been busy, I assume, in the lab with in-game syndicate getting launched. I don't think we've had you on since the site has gotten its feet going here. How are you feeling about everything over at the in-game syndicate?
You know, I'm really quite happy with how it's gone so far. Honestly, my biggest fear was that we just get, crickets. We put this thing out and nobody would show up. But we're over 100 people now in just a few weeks.
That's great.
The Discord is pretty active. It's a little bit of the experience of interacting with people in Discord gives me a little bit of imposter syndrome because there are a lot of extremely smart people in there. You know much more about various things than I do, which is cool, but also intimidating. So I got to stay on my game. I've been having fun putting together these toy game videos with Brian. So that's what I've been spending most of my time on thus far. So that's been really fun to do.
Aspects I like that you just kind of reminded me of that I didn't really think ahead, think in advance that this would happen, is kind of like the barrier to entry is pretty high to get into the Discord. It's not nothing. It's not like super expensive, but, and so you get just a higher level of discourse, and I kind of want to keep that going forward. So like there, it's kind of hard like thinking about it, like from a business perspective, like most of the time you want as many people as possible. Right. And we all, like a lot of us, I don't know if we're all on the same page, but like, we kind of want to keep it just, all like high quality stuff, it's not for beginners. And I think especially the Discord, the way it's going, I just hope we kind of keep it at that level or even better. So like we started a programming channel, right? Like for coding and stuff on the Discord to share code or data or stuff like that. That would be just a giant waste of time on 95% of Discords, or just a clusterfuck. You know what I mean? Of like people who don't know what they're talking about. So like stuff like that, I don't know. I've appreciated so far.
Yeah. I think two things with like that you have going for it is, one, like you said, the barrier of entry, you're going to weed out like so many trolls. Like if someone is paying that much to be there, they're pretty excited to be in there and learn. And then also it allows you to grow more slowly and kind of establish a culture. And then like new people drop in and they're like, all right, this is the vibe. I'll fall in line. I remember with the Deposit Kingdom Discord, when the Top Shot stuff happened, we had like a million people coming at once and it was just like a shit show. But now it's like you come in and you join one. Oh, I'm getting feedback on you, Nerdy here. You come into the Discord, it's like there's an established vibe and community, and people don't get too out of line as much.
I was looking at your Discord the other day. Like you have like, 3,000 people, 3,300 people?
Yeah, there's a lot. There's a ton of sub communities. I prune it maybe every 6 months, get rid of like the just like the super inactive whatever. So it's a pretty accurate number. But yeah, it's been going now for a long time. And it's funny how many like sub worlds and niches are all under that umbrella.
Why would you prune it? Just out of curiosity.
Just because like to get an accurate view of the numbers, and because like I do get a lot of like spam and bots. There's some guy in there that just coming in and like shilling his affiliate code or whatever. And so like when those people do those drive bys and then like leave or whatever, then I just like try to boot them in an easy way.
That was big in the crypto when the NFT boom. Yeah. Like someone was like spamming my private one back then. It's like I have to change all the rules for these fucking people.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because like on you know how the algorithm works on Reddit, right? Like if you're not part of that community and you just come in there and try to self-promote something, like the mods will just boot you right away. Like you have to earn your stripes in there. Discord, it's like a little easier to just kind of dive bomb in there. But it always fascinates me, the people who, even like I have a self-promotion channel in the Discord. That's what it's for. Like go promote it. But I always find it funny when it's like people who aren't normal or active in the Discord go in there to use it. It's like, it's going to be effective if people know who you are. Like, with that's who it's for, the people who are part of the community and then trying to shout something out. But it's like, I've literally never seen you and you're going into the self-promotion part. Yeah, I'm sure everyone's going to check that out.
Yeah. Agreed.
So what kind of, you mentioned your users. What have you guys found? Like, what would you say is the demographic? Like, hardcore DFS players, like mid-tier DFS players trying to take the next level? Like, what is that looking like?
I would say both of those, actually. Yeah, what do you think? What do you think, Dan? Yeah,
I would say that, too. Probably about, so far, it's probably about half and half. I imagine it'll get more skewed over time because I think the bulk of serious players already knew about this, and the ones that want to join have joined, probably. All of them. So over time, I think additional subs will be closer to that middle point than to the like hardcore, like 150 maxer over time. So I'd expect it to get more of those, like, you know, top 50% of players for sure, but maybe not the like tippity top as many, because anybody who wanted to join us would have done so already. That's sort of my take.
Mm-hmm. Probably anyone serious. Like, if you're looking for just quick projections for the day or something like that, you know, more like the RG type of guys, or like a, what's it called? You know, like the rundown sheet of the games that day, you know, stuff like that. Those type of guys, they're never going to sign up.
Right.
What has been the biggest piece of feedback you guys have gotten since launching from paying users?
Huh. Yeah, nothing to really, no one's really suggested any changes,
nothing,
really.
Nothing major in terms of direction, I think. I mean, some people have ideas of, like, what they want us to talk about next. But in terms of changes, not a lot. I mean, what we have now is pretty simple. I mean, we have, it's like video content organized around several topics that we think are important and high level. And then, you know, interacting with people. So I think people are happy with that piece, generally speaking.
And I feel like you guys have probably also self-selected a crew that aren't, you know, if you're signing up for this, you're not like, hey, tell me the answers to the test today. It's people who are there to learn. They actually care about the process.
Yeah. And I mean, 99% of our subs are already have a subscription to some site that can do those kinds of things already. So like, they don't need that from us, and we don't want to be that. So we're not really direct competition with those kinds of sites. We're something a little different. Yeah.
Yeah. My elevator pitch is, if you have ChatGPT in an endgame sub, you could build your own stuff. And if you don't want to go that far, you could utilize the content from all the other sites. This is how do you like utilize it in a more efficient or plus EV, if you want to say, way, how to use all the tools out there, stuff like that. But we're almost like, we're pretty damn sure we're not going to be doing projections ever, or anything like that, especially for like NBA or things that need to be like updated constantly throughout the day. But we might come out with some tools to help like leverage some of the other sites too. So we'll see how that goes. Tools is a pain in the ass.
So I have my in-game syndicate account up here. Talk just a little bit nerdy about the concept between the concept of these toy games, what they are, you know, hoping to accomplish, and then maybe we could look at some stuff.
Sure. Well, the idea of a toy game is it's a very old one, and it's basically a game that's so small that you can basically solve it completely. You can figure out every aspect of the game with precision, and the goal of exploring these kinds of games for Endgame Syndicate and for our subs is to build intuition about how DFS and best ball and whatever other gambling games we go into, how they actually work. So I really have, there's really two kinds of toy games that I work with, and which I differentiate on size. There are some that are so small you can just solve them with pencil and paper or in your head. But I spend very little time there and do a sort of more intermediate size game where it's a toy game if you're a computer. So I can solve it with precision using a computer, but it's a little bit bigger and it can elucidate, you know, certain concepts that we have. So that's sort of the general gist of it. You're hoping to interact with it, ask questions, you know, tweak some knobs on these games, you know, run some programs, see what it spits out.
I'm sure it'll help once I kind of see it on its feet, but is the concept of the toy game where you like have this epiphany when you see how it works and you're like, ah, now I understand that concept? Or is it like calibrating, understanding like ranges of outcomes and probabilities? Is it more like nuance, the takeaway?
I think it's a bit of both. I think initially it's going to be more of the former, where we're going to, in these videos, there are certain DFS concepts, which for most serious players are like going to be completely old hat. Like this is stuff we know, but it's sort of motivating and showing how you reason to that conclusion with these toy games. Like it's sort of a more rigorous way of developing those intuitions is what I would say. Later on, I have ambitions to do some much more complicated things, and we can talk about that a little bit later about best ball, because I do want to do some toy best ball games, and that gets really nasty really quick. I can go ahead and show you on the screen just the dead simplest beginner toy game that we have here. So
yeah, let's see it.
I'll just describe this game. And we go over this, I think, in the first two videos, because it's very simple. This is analogous to, if you ever watched Blender's course, he has a picking marbles out of a jar he talks about. I have jelly beans. That's my differentiator here. So, but you basically have a bowl filled with jelly beans of different colors, mm-hmm. and you know how many there are in the bowl. And then somebody's going to randomly select one jelly bean, and that's the winning color. So your lineup is just a color. So you just pick the color you want, and it's winner take all. So, you know, if we're playing heads up and you pick red and I pick green, and green comes out, I win. Red comes out, you win. And if some other color comes out, we get our money back. So it's a tie. That's okay. The whole game. It's very, very simple. It's like the simplest DFS you could possibly imagine. So I'm just going to show you here. So I have a little program that will solve an equilibrium strategy for these games. And you can tell it how many players. So I have two players. And then how many of each color jelly bean you have. So I've got 60 red ones. And I've got 40 green ones. And if I'm willing to ask, well, Brian knows the answers to all these already, but what do you think the strat is here, Pete, for the 60 reds and 40 greens, winner take all, winner jelly
beans? My opponent knows that there's 60 reds and
yes,
40 greens.
The assumption here is that your opponent knows everything you do. So you basically have perfect projections.
And so then I would probably work under the assumption that my opponent is going to select red like near 100% of the time.
Correct. And if you select red, then you're going to guarantee a tie, right?
Yep. And then the Dan Toy Game site is going to take our rake.
That's right. Yeah, these are all rake free. So that's for now. No, I'm just kidding.
Yes.
Yeah, I eat one jelly bean after each contest is run.
Yeah, why is there only 99 now? Yeah, so I'm gonna, knowing with that, I am going to pick green. I'm gonna sacrifice my 10% here from a game theory standpoint. Am I correct?
No, you're not correct. So
damn it.
You knew. The answer for this one is to always pick red, because
okay,
if I pick red and he picks red, we break even. Mm-hmm. If I pick red and he picks green, I'm 60% to win and he's 40.
Yep.
Right. So red is a minimum of 50% equity and a maximum of 60. If I pick green, then we tie when we both pick green, but then I have 40% when he picks red. So I'm at most 50% and as low as 40. So red is always better here. So if we run this program, it will basically say, yeah, the equilibrium is for each player to always pick red.
Okay.
And you can't improve on that at equilibrium.
Oh, no, I was just going to then get into adjusting the inputs, but yeah, keep going here.
Yeah. So just for people who don't know the definition of an equilibrium here is nobody can change their strategy by themselves and get more EV. So if we both play red, it's an equilibrium because either of us switching to green is going to make things worse for us. So we can't make any changes and do any better. So we just both break even all the time.
Okay.
So a DFS analogy, Pete, would be a cash game. Why would you ever play like the third or fourth best lineup, right? You would just play the best and hope he doesn't tie you, right?
Yes.
Right. The only exception to that would be if there was some non-transitivity in the lineups, meaning like lineup A is better than B and B is better than C, but somehow C is also better than A. If that were true, then you wouldn't have a concept of the best projected lineup. But I think in real world DFS, you don't get so many rock, paper, scissory scenarios like that.
Because then you do have concept of, you know, top heavy prize pools and rake that change the balance on how to approach this problem.
Well, then you start having to mix because you can't just pick one thing. So in rock, paper, scissors, like if you always play rock, your opponent would always pick paper and always beat you. And then you're not at equilibrium because you can change from rock to scissors. Mm-hmm. And now you're always beating him and you're still not at equilibrium because he can change from paper back to rock. So in those kinds of games, so in fact, we can just do this. The strategy is just to mix equally between all of them. And that's what you'll see here. So here, it's a stupid algorithm, but eventually it'll get at exactly 33.333 for all of them. You could just do this with pencil and paper. But yeah, because if you're over on any one of them in rock, paper, scissors, your opponent just jams the thing that beats that. And then you're not at equilibrium.
So what is the in game for this toy puzzle? Where does my light bulb moment come from here, Nerdy?
I'll just give you one of them here. So let's make the game a little bigger. What colors do I want? Orange, yellow. This is important. These are the important. So we're going to do okay, so there's 40 orange, 30 yellow, 20 blue, and 10 black.
Okay.
And we're doing a three-man again. So what can we say about some of these colors? Well, are there any obvious things we could say at equilibrium? And I'm solving a special kind of equilibrium where everybody is doing the same, playing the colors with some sort of mixed strategy here. So each player is going to have some percentage of the time they play orange and some percentage of the time they play yellow, and they're going to randomize. So there's an equilibrium strategy here. Well, I'll just start with obvious. Orange has the most at 40, so it should be the highest orange. That seems obvious. This is a three-man we have here. Can we say anything about black? It's 10% of the jar, right? Go ahead, yeah.
No, I was saying like if you know the worst, like if you know one of your opponents is going to do orange, one's going to do yellow, like the worst you could be getting it in is with 20 blue Like there would be no point to ever pick black against two other opponents.
That's exactly right. Yeah, black has dominated strategy here because, and this principle. There's some edge cases, but the general principle is if you have a contest and your lineup's chance of beating the lineups you're likely to face is less than one over the number of contestants, then it's probably a dominated lineup. So here we have a three-player contest. So one over three is about a third of the time. And if you have a lineup that's less than a third of the time likely to beat the kinds of lineups we're going to see, you can't play it. So you're right. Black is not even close to that threshold. It's only 10%. So black is a dominated color. So now, once we solve that, we're basically playing orange, yellow, blue, because nobody in the right mind is going to play black. But now we can apply the same conclusion to blue, because blue is only 2/9 of the remaining jelly beans. So that's 0.222%. But our fair share is a third. So we're not going to see any blue either. So if we solve this, that's what we'll find is blue and black immediately go to zero, because it's not contrarian, you're not getting paid off enough for how contrarian it is, right?
Gotcha.
So this is an example of the kinds of things we're exploring. And then, you know, after we quickly get done with this jelly bean game, we scale it up and find a few basic properties, and then we get to something that's quite a bit more analogous to NBA. So you've got lineups with athletes, you've got normal distributions, you start messing with salaries, and then we ask questions like, well, what happens if, you know, you increase the number of players in the salary range? What happens if you mess with the standard deviation? What does it do to the strategy?
Because what you're getting at is kind of the age-old question for, you know, DFS hand builders, even who are looking at projection versus ownership and at, you know, what is the disparity between those two where, you know, it doesn't matter how high owned a guy is. If a guy projects for 100 points in the NFL, it doesn't matter if he's 100% owned. Like you're playing that guy and understanding like where is that tipping point of where a guy becomes unplayable or where you have to play him.
Right. I think Shady maybe in the Discord had an example of this where, like, imagine you have a roster spot and there's only two guys that fit. And one guy is 50% chance to get 100 points and 50% chance to get 0 points. So he's got an average projection of 50. And then you have a second guy that always gets 3 points. Well, if those are literally your only choices and they have the same salary, and you have to take one or the other, it actually doesn't matter which you take, because there's a 50-50 chance that each of them is better than the other. Like, this is if you have to get the notes. So I'm just forget about right. the flatter payout structures. But if you're literally trying to get the opto, it actually doesn't matter. Even though one is a median of 50 and the other has a median of, or a mean of 50 and the other has a mean of 3, because it's. You know, how often these factors occur, right? Yeah.
Any other comments on this toy puzzle, Brian?
One really, you know, this is kind of an old poker discussion about equilibrium strategy and how can you win if you're playing an equilibrium strategy? Because like you use the paper, rock, scissors example, you're never going to win because you're just basically trying not to break even. And there's no winning strategy here. Well, this example he just showed shows that you still can make a profit by your opponent making a mistake. So if you play the equilibrium strategy of 0.71 orange, 0.28 yellow, if your opponents deviate from that at all and take blue or black or something like that, you profit.
Or even orange and yellow in the wrong
order. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or wrong percentages. Yeah.
So, and then that's where you get into the territory of, I mean, that would be playing it game theory optimal. But if someone knew you were going to do this every time, you could then potentially exploit them with a counter strategy.
No. So the idea of this kind of strategy is there isn't an exploit, right?
Okay.
So if you're playing this kind of equilibrium strategy, and your opponents aren't colluding, that's a big if, by the way. We can talk about
three
that.
Man.
Three, yeah. We can talk about that in a second.
But a lot of controversies in the jelly bean streets. You got to be careful.
Yeah, for sure. But if you take this to the limit, and you have, if you solve this perfect equilibrium strategy, you could literally present the strategy to your opponent, and they can't do anything about it. Now, in practice, DFS is so messy and complicated that it's quite difficult and impossible to actually play it, and it's also very far from optimal to do so, in the sense of you can make a lot more money just utilizing your ownership estimates and punishing the field for screwing it up. So I when you hear these debates about in the poker world, which is similar but a little different, it's like, you know, should I be playing, trying to emulate this GTO or exploit? I mean, I think I have sort of a weak stance, which is that it's always good to know what the equilibrium looks like. That's always good information to have, because anytime you're trying to exploit the field, you are in effect saying they're making a mistake. Well, how do you know it's a mistake? Well, you have some idea what the right number is. That's what the equilibrium strategy is, right? If I think the Yankees are under-owned today, that implies I have some kind of take on what the correct ownership is. And that correct ownership number is the equilibrium number. So knowing what the number is, or just trying to get close, honestly, you don't literally have to nail the number. Like, you just need to be able to reason about, well, I see, you know, there are five guys at center in the same salary range that all have a very similar projection for tonight's NBA slate. And one of them, for whatever reason, or two of them are making up like 80% of the ownership. Well, playing the other three is just obviously plus EV. They're all basically the same player, the same projection. So I don't know exactly what the equilibrium is, but just being able to reason about, you know, what it should be and what the counter move is something.
Well, it'd be like in DFS, like say you did have like a perfect sim or whatever, and it spits out the optimal rates for ownership for each player. And then if you knew the field, let's say 10%, it says you should have on Tyreek Hill, and you know the field's going to have 2%. In that spot, or actually, I'm trying to think of the way to word it. Is that where it's like you have the equilibrium on what the sim is telling you, and then you decide how much you would want to exploit that? Like, would you want to have more than 10% because the field's only going to have 2 or whatever?
That's right. Yeah. So if you actually nail the equilibrium and play it, then you're going to do better than the field before the rake. Mm-hmm. And then it's, yeah, just as you said, how far do you want to push that delta between what the athlete or combo should be owned versus what it is going to be owned. Right.
Mm-hmm. The problem with the optimal example you're giving to is like no one's giving you the optimal yet either. That yeah. He's doing something different than the optimal you'll see on most DFS sites, where they're like running players against each other and like positionally and stuff like that. And if they do it in a contest sim way, you're playing pure exploitive fashion purely, which with also some very big rigid guesses.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
one of the problems with playing exploitatively is it's quite brittle. It's more brittle than trying to approximate balance, in the sense that your errors get magnified in terms of your results. And it also ramps the volatility. So when you're right, it's extremely valuable, but volatile. But when you're wrong, it's like extremely costly and ramps up your volatility both. So if you're good at it, it's a great way to play. I think, honestly, most successful DFS players are mostly thinking in exploitative terms, because that's where most of the most of the alpha is.
So an interesting thing. So obviously, like in this toy game, the reason it is simplified is because you're able to control so many of the variables to like illustrate one of those concepts. As you start adding in all of the variables that DFS has, it gets harder and harder. I want to talk about some of the challenges with like simming out, you know, season long best ball, but just thinking to what you were talking about with DFS and like contest sims, like that's really hard because you're trying to predict what the field is going to do in addition to what's going to happen on the field. At least with best ball, season long best ball, isn't it like a little less hard to predict what the field is going to do because there's not actually as many options. Like, you know, people are selecting one player in each round. Rosters generally look like this. So how do you think about that? Because it sounds like simming season long best ball is a much bigger undertaking than even a contest sim for a single slate of DFS.
Yes, it's vastly more complicated. So you have several problems for season long. First of all, you have to consider almost two different dimensions of the game. You have the piece that's exactly the same as DFS, which is you have a payout table, right? So whatever the payout structure is, and then you know how many contestants there are, close enough anyway. So that part is the same. So you basically need to be able to do all of your calculations on all of the lineups that come out of these drafts. That part is just like DFS, right? I can sim those out, you know, all of these lineups together, right? But then you have the little problem of the draft itself, right? So you have this multi-round, multi-agent problem where you, unlike DFS, where you could generate a relatively large set of lineups that isn't anywhere close to all of them, is largely representative, and you could do some reasoning about them, write some programs, and try to figure things out. Best ball, the number of different spots you can be in is like infinite, right? Once you're on to the, you know, 15th player drafted, you've never been here before. It's completely unique and no one else will ever arrive there again. That the amount of branching that goes through that drafting process. So you can't use sort of brute force methods on it because there are too many possible paths through the draft. So that's a big problem. Then you have the fact that it's a multi-step and multi-agent. So you're trying to model multiple opponents who all have different ideas and different goals and different priors about things, right? So I need to capture, if I'm trying to develop this, I need to capture the fact that, oh, this guy just drafted this kind of receiver a little early. I have to bump my probability that he's going to draft this sort of medium strength quarterback later to go with him, right? Uh-huh. So figuring out how to model the opponents during the draft is another problem. It's problem number three, modeling the entire season of football. Good luck with that. That sounds really, really hard. You need to model. Basically, you need to do it. To do this correctly, you would need to sim out every game in the season before the start of the season. That's really, really hard. So you're going to have to
apply. Is that just a computing, like a computing power issue of like there's just
computing power is nothing for this.
Okay.
Simming games compared to everything I've described and I'm going to get to, simming the games themselves is a piece of cake. I mean, it's not, but compared to everything else in this, it is a piece of cake. It's how do you assign probabilities of all of these different running backs being the running back in week 10? Like, who's the guy? What's the chance? I don't know. You might know. I don't know. So you have to capture all of these things in order to really do this robustly. So I don't think it's really practical to quote unquote solve season long NFL for those reasons and a few others. However, I do want to do toy games around daily drafts because I think it's possible to learn to elucidate some concepts there. And I have been doing some best balling mostly to test some rudimentary software I developed to try and figure some of these things out. So I've been doing a little bit of golf and a little basketball, a little baseball. And I think it is possible to do toy games for something like a really small version of golf. So imagine, so for people who don't know, in a daily best ball tournament, you might have, let's say, 100 total people, and maybe 30% of the prize pool goes to first. This would be a small contest. And each lineup in the contest comes out of a draft. And for my toy game, I would just start with like a two-person draft. So with maybe drafting three guys. So from a pool of a really small pool of like 10 or 12. And then I think I have some methods that can solve a game that's that small. And then the kinds of questions that I think are worth answering are like, obviously if in a top heavy daily best ball contest, you can't, if everybody has roughly the best possible projections, I'm just going to hand wave that part. You can't just draft everything in order of projection because that can't be correct, because then anybody who just deviated from the standard order would be printing just by virtue of being different from the other 98 drafts or 49 drafts out of 50 in our 100 man contest, right? So yeah. Like if the standard order is to draft athlete A, B, C, D, E, F, in our example, maybe sometimes you go A, B, and then instead of choosing C, you switch to D. But how often should you do that? Like, how much of a projection difference are you willing to give up? What kinds of, does it make sense to think about groups of athletes based on projection deltas? Like, if there are clusters of athletes up here and then there's a big drop, like, how does that affect, you know, all this kind of stuff? Like, how often do you make these kinds of moves? So that's the kind of stuff I'm really interested in trying to figure out with a toy game.
Yeah. What? Oh, go ahead, Brian.
The people in chat begging Nerdy not to ruin best ball, and I think they're gonna be fine. He doesn't have enough time. Best ball is too hard to.
Yeah, you can't scale it.
You can't scale it, so it's actually kind of lucky for you guys because he'll give out more alpha. There's two ways I was thinking of using this alpha, or if someone eventually signs up, because he will be doing these videos on best ball eventually. You could either try to do it yourself, and like, which some people can, like type of people who sign up for Endgame, they will try to make their own equilibrium strategies for things. Or you could try to use the concepts and then apply them while you're live drafting, which I think is definitely more up like Pete and like Davis and the guys who are ship chasing bros, where they could use some of the equilibrium strategies or you know, whatever comes out of it anyways, live while you're drafting. I think a lot of people will probably be using it that way more so than trying to then get their own Linux or console, whatever he was using, Ruby on Rails. Now you know what you're using, and do it all from scratch. But it's possible.
Yeah,
I mean the solving the daily game stuff seems like it could happen very quickly when you think of like, well, one, it's, you know, say the NFL version, right? It's already three less roster spots than a DraftKings. The ownership is like very projectable as far as what clip players are getting drafted. Just so like there seems to be, you know, I would be fascinated to find out some of the stuff. I think the big questions for people with like NFL dailies is how much stacking should I be doing? You know, we know that benefits us maybe more in a nine person lineup than a six? How much should we be scrolling down? That was obviously a big topic. So I feel like you can get caught up to speed there much, much, much faster than you can season long best ball.
It's true too. But I think even there, I think it's more likely that whatever things we find out looking at EQ strats for this and toy games, I think, again, this is probably even more so in best ball, that the edge is going to be in just hammering the under-owned stuff, like massively exploiting the holes in the field. The EQ strat is going to be, again, for developing intuition about what the field is getting wrong. I probably wouldn't play it. I wouldn't even try to play an EQ strat unless you're me and you're testing your software.
Yeah.
It's probably not worth doing it.
It's fascinating too, like thinking of the DraftKings versus underdog thing. Like when you're in a draft, there's this psychological anchoring to ADP that funnels people to that. Whereas like when you're building out a DraftKings lineup, yes, people are plugged in and they kind of know who's going to be popular, but there's nothing saying like this 5K wide receiver is going to be 40% owned. He's like way undervalued. Like when you remove that anchoring effect, it like naturally, I think probably smooths out some of those ownerships in a way. With underdog, it ratchets to the other side where it like magnetizes people toward clicking those players at a higher clip than they maybe should.
Yeah. There's less cost because like the Scottie Schefflers are cost 13,000 now. So like everyone wants Scottie Scheffler, but it's 13 grand.
It is funny. I've done a bunch of golf underdog because it's one round. It's like the simplest game they have. There's no positions, no nothing. And I've talked about this elsewhere, but like there are huge swaths of the player pool on any given Thursday morning that are basically identical to each other. They're within a couple percent. And yet there's some of them that just always seem to get drafted a little earlier and some that always get drafted a little later for no obvious reason other than that's the order that the user interface has presented them, right? So it is kind of funny. That's just sort of it's just such an elementary mistake. I think most of the people listening to this are not making, but a lot of casual drafters are. It's like they're not even considering the projection delta or the relative scarcity. They're just thinking, well, how many picks ahead can I go? Just like it's a static heuristic. It's like, well, I can't go more than like five. Like that would just be crazy. You know what I'm saying? I just wonder how many,
how much
of it is as simple as that, which is actually probably true in the early rounds, but not in the later ones at all.
Let me ask a hypothetical question. Cause like that, so similar to your golf example, like a very familiar example from last year in battle royales would be like, Nico Collins and Tank Dell projecting very similarly on a given week, Nico getting selected in every draft, Tank barely getting selected, like very, regular dynamic. What would the ADPs look like? Help me wrap my head around if everyone was playing like the optimal, like perfect strat there, where you were basically like mixing and matching those at the right rate, or maybe the field is now, oh, we're all selecting Tank Dell. Obviously, then that would mean like Nico's ADP would drop down. I'm trying to like wrap my head around what, because eventually some players are going to have to get ordered in ADP from pick 20 to 36, and those are the quote unquote bad picks because they don't project that much differently from picks 37 to 60. What would that happen if everyone was playing a GTO strategy for that?
Well, if you have two players that are identical, they should have the same ADP, right? So I would imagine like, and you can imagine getting there without people actually literally all playing some kind of equilibrium strat. If the field gets close enough in aggregate, so maybe some people are taking this guy way too early and some are taking way too late, but the ADP might just sort of average out to be the correct number. Although that's probably not that simple now that I think about it because, anyway. But I think if everyone were literally trying to play perfectly balanced, then you would just see these clumps of players that were all like, I don't even know how they listed in the different sites where I guess they do some kind of averaging, but Because the ADP isn't really telling you what you want, because it doesn't distinguish the sort of logical groupings of players in the same tranche, right? We actually get in this in our toy game videos in DFS, where it makes sense, in the last one we made, it makes sense to think of, to group players logically, either by salary or position or projection or both, when you're sort of reasoning about behavior of the field as a whole. It just makes life much easier. So you can say, okay, well, yeah, there's ADP in a vacuum, but okay, there's these 12 receivers that are all about the same. So now I'm thinking about, okay, why is there an ownership delta? Is the field wrong, or is it because, for instance, a quarterback that pairs with one of them is really attractive this week? And because of that correlation, it's boosting it's getting a better draft position for his receiver, even though the receiver in a vacuum is maybe not any better than these other 12 guys. Those kinds of things are what I'm interested in looking at. Yeah.
Yeah. And then there's so many fun leverage angles in that too, right? Where it's like, oh, if in that, my Nico Collins example, everyone's stacking Stroud with Nico. So not only do you wipe out, you know, a sixth of the lineups, but then you know, Tank Dell teams are not only unique, but you've also taken out a bunch of other ones that have failed.
Right.
Yeah. Another aspect of this is when you're getting your best ball rankings from a content site, one thing I talk about getting your projections from a content site, it's very useful to know what they're baking in there. If they could tell you, or if you watch one of their podcasts and they explain what they're doing, then you can know if you're making any adjustments to those, what you're not double counting and stuff like that. Same thing with projections, ADP or rankings for basketball is like, are they putting Rashid Rice up this high because they know everyone pairs him with Pat Mahomes or something around this, so they're going to move him up a little higher because they don't want to look, you know, like, oh, we're ranking him too low, you know, or they just, you know, for whatever reason, are they making their rankings? Where are they coming from on building these rankings? You know, Pete, you see what I mean?
Yeah,
for sure.
Well, and people love to double count stuff, where the whole thing has always been, if you have really good projections, their impact, oh, the total went up or the weather's bad. It's like, well, that gets funneled down into good projections, but then people would be like, he's off my board. It's a bad weather game. And it's like, well, if you use a good rankings provider, projections provider, they've already accounted for that.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, it's been really fun to get into this stuff because unlike DFS, like, I don't really know anything about best ball. Like, I've been having to just sort of bootstrap it from very little, which is really fun. Like, I've watched a little of Pete's stuff and Neil and Bime4 and others and Matic and stuff, but like a grand total of like, I don't know, less than 10 hours of content on it. So it's fun to just like reinvent the wheel. But it'll probably look pretty stupid to a lot of people who are like, well, yeah, of course you don't do such and such, but
you're gonna be like, look, it looks like you should stack. It's like, yeah, we kind of knew that one. Man. Thanks.
There were a few questions in here.
Can I say something really quick before questions? The season-long best ball. So Dan was talking about, it's probably not, you probably can't solve it. Maybe you can. It's gonna be so much effort. I also would say, if doing these sort of toy game studies for season long will also probably explain generally a lot of things maybe I'm wrong, but like, you know, the dead zone, is that real? Which Dan was talking about, is there like a level of players drastically that would drastically affect your equilibrium or your EV or however you're calculating it? So I think a lot of the questions can be solved through toy games with just some assumptions, and where you're like, okay, let's just say backup running backs don't count. Like, who cares? Let's just say that doesn't matter for a second. Now let's solve, you know, and you solve simpler versions, which will lead you in a general correct direction.
That's absolutely true. In fact, for instance, we could create a quote unquote season long toy game. It's like a 6-week season, and there are a grand total of 8 teams. And then there's like a round 5 and a round 6 to get that element in, you know, the week 14 through 17.
Well, what you're describing is playoff basketball, right? Where you have a finite amount of teams, three, 4 weeks or whatever. That might actually be something you could control pretty well.
Right. I probably do a much smaller version of football too. It would probably be like, you know, four man rosters or something. And, you know, relatively small number of options to choose from. So to Brian's point, we could learn some things from something like that for sure.
Yeah.
That's a good example of a toy game. It's a toy to a computer, but it's not a toy to us humans. Like the computer could do it, but we're not doing it freehand.
Yeah. Let's see. A few kind of syndicate questions here. Brian Consigliere, and would you be interested or able to do videos a la carte, maybe down the road, maybe after the community has had a real look at it?
That's what Yuta wants to do. So that might be what we end up doing. Or maybe the way I see it is it would be like the Nerdy Tenor Game Theory series. Here you go. You want it or you don't? You don't have to do anything else. You could have just that, you know. A la carte, like every single one. I don't know. Maybe. Right now we're just starting.
Yeah.
I think it's a fair question for people just with the price point. And they're like, man, this video, I'd pay $10 to watch that video. I just can't, you know, afford $150 for the whole thing or whatever.
I was going to look at the poker sites because I haven't looked in a decade and see what, because that seems like a direct correlate to me. Like, how much does Doug Polk charge? Does he do a la carte for everything or is it just series? I think it's a series. So, but maybe we'll reach out to them one day and ask what the best way to do it.
My first guess is eventually series probably makes sense.
Yeah. This is a good question to answer because I know some people got very intimidated by seeing the lines of code on the screen. Derek saying, what kind of resources or tools would you need to take full advantage of the syndicate? Seems like there's coding involved. Do you want to kind of explain that you're the ones doing the coding to illustrate the concept there? They don't have to do coding.
Yeah, you don't have to be a coder to get value. I mean, I think I would consider that a bit of a failure for my series if you watch it and like, well, I can't program, so I'm not getting any info out of this. You can do stuff. You can try and if you are a programmer, that could be fun for you to try and replicate some of the stuff we've done and to check my data. That's always welcome. But no, I think the point is using what we do to help you. It doesn't mean you have to, you know, whip out the programming environment and get in there, but you're welcome to do so, of course.
Yeah.
It depends on the person. I know they're coding in there too. So go ahead.
But I think, I was honestly confused by this too. I initially thought that it was like a game where I was clicking the buttons, but it's you walking through those things and you're doing the screen share of what you just screen shared earlier.
Right. So far for the training videos, I think it is certainly possible, and I am not promising this, but that in the future, if we got a really interesting toy game that was actually fun to play, I could imagine, like the example earlier, we had like a season long mini NFL thing that I made. Like you could just hop in the streets against a computer and play it and they could critique you. That would be kind of
People would have a blast like making a best ball lineup in the way you do a DFS one and then like simming it out and just seeing like how it fared in those scenarios or what percentage of the time it won. I think people would get a kick out of that.
That would be cool to you live draft and then it grades you. Like that.
That would be possible in principle, yeah.
That is what people love the grades, man, too. You know, even back to the you do your Yahoo season log draft and they just give you some arbitrary C minus and then you're up in arms about it.
In each video, though, we try to like make real practical DFS what does this mean for us? You know, and like talk about like an NBA, I guess I could see this mattering with Giannis and his salary compared to a backup, you know, and also we have a round table at least once a month. We did two last month where people ask questions behind the payroll and then Q&A specific. So like Yuta did a Q&A specific where he did a video, people ask questions on it, and then he does another video answering those questions. So, it should be from everything from if you just build a couple lineups by hand up to 150, you should get a lot out of it.
Yeah, I also love it. So I saw a comment in the chat earlier referencing Yuta's line of "The Sims are in my head," and it is just hilarious that you guys are partnered up where we have like the actual Sim Bros and the guy who says "The Sims are in my head" all under one umbrella. That's just too perfect.
Yeah, it makes sense to me though because he's the no ball guy. Like he is the no ball guy in all of gambling, basically. So like me and Dan cannot answer any of those questions. Like we're not even trying to. So it's perfect. I think perfect mix.
For sure. Yeah,
I see this question from Neil wants to know what I think of Dontayvion Wicks.
Yeah, I'll ask you two questions here. Yeah, this is be careful how you answer this because this is the ultimate litmus test here, Nerdy.
Is that like is that something a candle maker would use?
I was hoping we'd get a candle joke. this guy knows ball. Balls of wax.
Balls of wax, yeah.
Yeah, you gotta buy the ones with the Dontayvion. I can't even pronounce his name. I know Davis likes him.
Yeah.
Or did he flip-flop?
Yeah, I mean Davis will flip-flop in about a week, I'm sure. But no, okay. For a while he was the person that everyone was universally on. There wasn't one person who wanted to say anything bad about Dontayvion Wicks. It doesn't look like Neil is. Dan. Let's see, Nerdy. Final question here again from Neil, just being a powerhouse in the chat today. Ship It Nation versus Run Pure Sports. Have we asked you this on air before?
I think I was asked, and I think I cowardly refused to answer.
Oh, yeah, you did. Now that you're a site operator, you're kind of elbowing, for market share in the space, you're kind of willing to throw a Molotov cocktail out there now?
That makes it even less likely that I'm going to throw.
You're saying that anyone... How about this? Here, I bet I can get you to answer this question. Which site subs are more likely to also purchase an in-game syndicate sub? Ship It Nation or Run Pure Sports?
Wow. I was just going to say, what do you think the overlap is?
Dredging the bottom here. I got no idea. I haven't been involved in either community other than just random interactions with people online or in person. So, gosh, I don't know.
Wow. All right.
Do you know, Brian, how many of our subs are? I guess we could look and see which Discords other people are in, right? Can we see that?
That's true.
I'll give you the evidence.
No cross.
The evidence-based answer is Run Pure Sports is already partnered with SaberSim. They've reached across the aisle to the SimBro. Socialists. So they've already broken that barrier. They could do it with you guys.
Good point. Yeah, Run Pure is known for their sim, their love of Sims and all things, quantitative.
I would love, God, I would pay so much money to have Nerdy do a live office hours in the Run Pure Sports Discord showing his Jelly Bean toy game for their subs.
No, for we can do that. Hey. We can do that for April Fool's Day. I'll be the on some show. I'll be the live before lock answering the ball takes.
Just tell me the winners, and he's talking about Nash equilibrium with jelly beans. Sounds perfect. Obviously, people need to check out in-game syndicate. Anything else you guys want to tease forthcoming? You mentioned the Discord. You of course got the videos, some lineup reviews in there. Anything I'm missing?
Well, right now it's videos and Discord. We have like projections and stuff occasionally, and ownership occasionally, and some of Yuta's inside picks, sports betting picks that Pete's used himself. But
I'm talking about the NFL draft ones.
Yeah.
Oh no.
I will not say anything.
But that is all. But that is all. Just like. Bonus if you want, there's no like hey, where's the ownership, it's like that might not come and might happen. It depends. So Yuta did, so I did PGA ownership, but Yuta did his small field PGA ownership for today, yesterday, but he doesn't do it all the time. So we might have some tools in the works, but that could take a while. The draft caddy we're moving over to Endgame under the Endgame umbrella. We signed a young up and coming short king to host.
Did you sign him?
Some of our videos on the Endgame channel. He will, yeah, and he'll have more affiliate codes if I could figure out how to do those and track them.
What is Davis doing for you guys?
He's doing one show a week and our roundtable host, so I don't have to host. And he's probably gonna be streaming with the draft caddy.
Okay. Very nice. And that, and are those shows on the In-Game Syndicate channel?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Nerdy, anything else from you? You want to show that that pint glass? Some eagle-eyed viewers noticed what that was.
Let me model it closer to the camera.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Take a screenshot for the model for the promo for the glass right there.
I know. I got to get that up there. Look at this. You take a sip out of this glass, it'll be spinning up toy games in no time. Nope. Thank you, Nerdy.
The only toys you play with if you drink.
All right, for me, I got Ship Chasing here in about 20 minutes, and then I got John Warner from the Bradge Bros, speaking of scrolling the F down, on the randomizer tonight. Got a lot of fun prompts, and then we're going to roll right into a Best Ball After Dark for the YouTube members at like 9:15 right after that show. Appreciate you guys hanging out in the chat. Check out In-Game Syndicate, subscribe to the YouTube channels, and we'll catch you guys next time on Lulz. Peace.
Mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.